The Ocelli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
March 23, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this indeed is the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you hear me saying this. Anyway, it is Wednesday, Wednesday, middle of the week. My microphone's a little hot. Sorry, I'm turning that down. But anyway, here we are, and we are live. But you could be catching us some other time, some other place, some other way. But we are live on Ocelli.com and in a few other places. But hey, what the hell? It's Wednesday. In the first hour, I'll be talking to Ed Opperman. And we're going to cover a subject that I haven't covered very much because, I got my views on it, and we're going to see where that all goes. And Ed, always Ed Opperman, if you go to OppermanReport.com, if you've been there before, you know Ed's always got little extra dirt on the dirty. So that's the way that rolls, and glad to be talking to Ed. It's been too long. In the second hour, we're going to be talking to Lori Simpson, and boy, that's going to be interesting. So we're splitting this up between two different topics of dissension, let's call it. Okay. Anyways, we'll get to that in the second hour. Ed, I don't want to waste time because we need to talk about Hunter Biden's laptop. But before we go there, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, Chuck. Things are looking up for me here. My health's not so great, but otherwise everything's going pretty good. How about yourself?
It's been a struggle. It's been weird. I got fired from a pretty good radio job. A lot of stuff. I haven't been communicating with you as often as I used to. You and I are friends, you know, and I consider you one of the very few people in independent media that is my friend. Okay. Only a handful of you guys out there that are actually my friend. And usually you and I will have back and forths about stuff that never makes it to air, but lately, I've been just tied up with a lot of different things. I was, forget it. It doesn't matter. We don't need to catch up with me.
Yeah.
Okay, let's catch up with you because I heard that you were having some health problems. I heard you were having some other problems, but I don't want to focus on all that. I want to get to the good stuff, and I know I can with you. So I'm before we go anywhere, I did mention Opperman Report. Obviously, anywhere where podcasts are available, that's still out there, right? I mean, still coming at you.
Sure.
So what else you want to make sure we mention before we get into the I always got to do this with you. It's always got to be greasy. But, you know, it's like Ed always knows about the dirt and the grease. You know, what else should we tell people about before we even go there?
Oh, okay. Well, my Patreon, okay, which is vital to this story because if you go to my Patreon, Opperman Report Patreon, I have on there the interview that I did that's got this whole ball started, okay, with me and the Hunter Biden laptop. My interview with Samantha Spiegel, who was when she was 9 years old, her school teacher assistant was John Mark Carr from the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Oh, God.
So that's important. I know. So that's important because she's involved in all this.
Yeah.
Then I have two in the Patreon. This raucous recorded press conference over there in Maryland at the computer repair place, okay, where these reporters, he let these reporters on, like five or six of them, they start shouting questions at him, and he's pretty good at fending them off. But every now and then, when they get to the chain of custody of the computer, it's no comment. Now, I got a hold of that recording. It was sent to me by someone that was there who said, Ed, man, this is gold. We got to get this out there. So I put it up in my Patreon. It's in a free section. And then really the most important thing, the exclusive firsthand from the guy's mouth testimony is my interview with Lucifer's banker, a guy named Bradley Birkenfeld, who's this big Swiss banking whistleblower guy. He got in trouble, did some time. But by blowing the whistle on these tax evaders, he got like, I think it was $125 million in reward money. And so some guys, they manage to work it out. They go to prison, but they get a reward, you know. I got to figure out how to do that one day.
Okay. I was going to say, you know, if you got to serve a couple of years, but it's going to get you $100 million, I don't know, pretty good trade. Maybe.
I agree with you, man. I agree. Even with the bad health, you know, you could do that on your head.
Yeah, I mean, one way or another. I mean, look, I could even hang out in protective custody for that long just in case. You know what I'm
saying? So true. So now, when people hear the Hunter Biden laptop, right away, it triggers, their political sightings and stuff like that. And this story is not that. It's also not about what's on the laptop. We all know that there's a lot of serious dirt on that laptop. And we've seen the pictures of him smoking crack with the prostitutes. We know this guy and John Kerry's son were running around the whole world with their hands out, taking money from anybody that would give it to him, extorting money. But that's really this story here is more on the chain of custody of the laptop.
See, now that's where I want you to pause for a second, because I want to just enter a couple of things in that you already touched on, which is, first of all, if this guy's running around in a dress, smoking crack, whatever else, you know how much I care? Not at all. Okay. The next thing is, though, they're running around and they're collecting money and they're using their, father's positions in order to gain. Again, I'm yawning. Okay. I'm not concerned about any of that crap. Now, you get into some of these other deeper, darker allegations about things that are on there, it's another story, okay? And I don't even know that stuff exists necessarily. I've had people contact me that normally I would trust on these sorts of things, right? Who have told me wildly different stories about what it is they know about this, about the chain of custody issue is a problem from everybody's angle, it seems like. Okay, and you and I both know that we get different weird contacts from people that sometimes, look, as crazy as some things sound, they turn out to be reliable. And it's usually somebody that you don't expect who just happened to wander into something, you know what I'm saying? And it's somebody who doesn't want to get their name out there, but they want a piece of information out. Okay, you and I are both familiar with how to handle that. Okay, you more so than me, but either way, you know we got a lot of stuff on this over the past, year and a half at least, right? This has been a very strange saga. And, they're corrupt. Yeah, no kidding. Their parents are politicians. What do you want? And I don't care if it's got an R, a D, or whatever in front of the name. Corrupt kids? Yawn. crack smoking, hookers, all this other stuff. Okay, again, yawn. All right, I don't care. But if there's something to it, needs to be known. Now, all that having been said, I also withhold any sort of hope that there's going to be something done about even the dirtiest of the dirty on there, because usually the privileged get away with things. And you can't say that the Biden kids, the Kerry kids, the Bush kids, they all get away with stuff, all of them. Okay, the Clintons, I don't even know what goes on over there, but, I mean, please, how many hours do we have? I forget it. The Trumps, I'm equal opportunity here. All of them scumbags. If they make it up to the top, guaranteed there's some scumbaggery afoot. Okay, it's just the way it is. But what is the real dirt on this, and what is actually going on? Because there were people that claimed right away that this was nothing but disinformation that was put out by the Russians. I don't put it past the Russians to do stuff like that. But I also ask myself, why? Why would you bother with this? And also, blackmail material, as we well know, as you actually know way better than me, sometimes exists in places for many, many years and never, never surfaces because deals are cut.
Exactly. So, right. Exactly.
Okay, and even though I know for a fact that there's certain films that exist and things like that, because everybody thinks, oh, it all ends up on the internet at some point. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. I've personally seen stuff that has never seen the light of day. And I know you have, too, and you actually have agreements where you can't allow anybody to know that you even know it exists. And I'm not making any judgments at you, Ed. It's your job, because let's not forget, Ed's a private investigator. You sign contracts. You make agreements to keep certain things private, all this kind of stuff. You get paid to do this. It is, part of your living.
Well, so, I got to tell you, Chuck, you know, I've also been fooled. You know, I was asked to come in and consult on certain things, and then I found out it was total bullshit, and now I can't say that. So they kind of lured me in, and it paid me a few bucks, you know, and now I can't say that. You know, this widely spread conspiracy is bullshit. I'd love to say it, not this particular one, but a lot of stuff, you know. Now, as far as – okay, now, even just today, because I've been talking about the Hunter Biden laptop a little bit lately, I told a story on TruAnon. That's available on the internet if you Google Hunter Biden, Opperman, TruAnon. I also told it on Sean Atwood, and he deleted it. I've told it a couple of times on my show. Now, just today, I was sent some alleged Hunter Biden with pictures with a child, okay? And again, you know, just good enough to skirt the law that it's not blatant child pornography, but Hunter Biden with a little kid. Okay, it's supposed to be from this laptop. Now, I don't believe it is. I've seen other pictures from the laptop, and they're just formatted a certain way. They don't look like these pictures that were sent to me. And also, too, now, a couple of things, too, as far as the allegations of child porn being on the computers, is that well, we know this. We know that the guy who was in possession of this laptop put a price tag on it. He said it was worth $2 million. He wanted $2 million for this laptop, Keith Ablo. Okay? And he didn't get that. But we also know, too, but you know, he put that figure on it. So there should be something very serious to be on that computer, more than we've seen, in my opinion.
Got to be, because now, is $2 million really the right price tag? Because, look, if you had the stuff, and Don Jeffries, just before, he was live on my network here, and I mentioned that you were going to be on my show talking about this, okay?
Yeah.
In the chat room, and he mentioned it and said it, and he said, oh, yeah, and then they wound up talking about the laptop. And he said, you know, there were allegations about this 10-year-old Chinese kid and all this stuff. And if that's on there, I got news for you, Ed, that's worth more than $2 million, in my opinion, because that's just – absolutely. There's, I mean, if you got something like that, that is clear as day, that's blackmail material well worth more than $2 million to somebody like the Bidens, in my estimation. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I got my menu of prices in
well, no. If you got $25 million for that computer company with the Chinese, yeah, you're right. They would pay $2 million, you know, or $5 million to keep this thing quiet, I'm sure.
You got
One other ingredient to put together with this whole puzzle is that when Carrick and Giuliani were first saying, oh, we've seen this laptop and there's child porn on this laptop, when they were hinting around back then, and Steve Bannon also saw this laptop and he was claiming he saw these kind of things, the minute I tweeted out to these guys and I says, well, if you guys have seen child pornography and you're sharing it amongst yourselves, you've all committed a very serious crime. And the next day they went to the cops and they made a police report. So that's a whole another piece to this puzzle.
Well, that's the interesting thing is if you assisted in distributing that, okay,
exactly.
If you were Mr. Giuliani and you had possession of that laptop for any reason, and then you gave it to somebody else, guess what you just did?
Exactly.
You distributed child pornography, or am I wrong?
No, 100% right. Even if someone sends me a cell phone to process a cell phone, we find some material on it. You got to call the police right then, there, that minute, and take it out of your possession right away. Otherwise, you're in possession. It's a big problem.
Right.
So there's a lot of working parts here. I was supposed to do an interview Monday with another person who has firsthand knowledge of this laptop, and I believe was part of this whole deal too. He was definitely there at the book signing party. But if you want to get into the whole story and how it started, I'll tell you, I'll lay out the whole thing for you because it does take about 45 minutes.
Okay. I'll just shut up and you go ahead. Okay.
No, feel free. Feel free to throw in your jokes and stuff, man. Okay. So what happened was this, okay? Way back around 2006, I'm watching TV. I see the story about John Mark Carr, okay? This guy who confessed to killing JonBenet Ramsey, right? And he's in Thailand, and they're extraditing him back. And back at those in 2006, you got to remember, it wasn't very common to be able to pull up someone's social media all at once. And I do a lot of work tracing emails, identifying people from the internet footprint, okay? So I dug up a ton of stuff on this guy, okay, where he was trying to lure these little kids into a cult and trying to – he was posting on Usenet saying he was a Christian counselor and wanted to talk to preteen girls. And I spotted all this stuff, and I turned it over to some friends of mine in true crime media, okay, because I was had my divorce and stuff going on back then. So I always kept it in the back of my mind, this John Mark Carr guy, and I always kept an eye on him. Years later, I see a report in the paper about this woman, Samantha Spiegel. When she was 19 years old, she went and had to get a restraining order against John Mark Carr because what he wanted her to do was help him kidnap a bunch of little 5, 6, 7-year-old girls that looked just like JonBenet Ramsey and have his own JonBenet Ramsey cult, okay? She met him when she was 9 years old, and he was her school teacher, okay, a teacher's aide at her Catholic school in San Francisco. So I find her. I track her. I said, this is a great story. I want to hear this story. I'm going to interview her. So I track her down. And it took like a few months to get her on the air, but then when I finally did, I said, well, let's record right now, okay, because I know I was going to lose her, okay? I get her on. We start recording. In the middle of the interview, she's telling me all this stuff about John Mark Carr and this stuff and that. In the middle of the interview, she blurts out, oh, and I had an affair, an S&M affair with Dr. Keith Abloh, who was married at the time when I was 19. I know. Dr. Keith Abloh, the Fox News contributor. Okay.
Okay.
So I says, well, have you ever said this before? She goes, no, I've never said this before in public. I says, well, okay, we got to bleep this out. I don't want to get sued by Keith Abloh. Right. But off the air, I says, hey, listen, man, if what you're telling me is true, we got a great lawsuit. Now, she outlined some of the abuse that she went through from Dr. Keith Abloh, okay? And this was just – this wasn't basic stuff. She thought that he was contacting her to counsel her because she was a guest on Fox News. And then he contacted her, and she thought, oh, he's offering me therapy. But no, this guy was off on a perv trip immediately with her. It got so bad with them. She was in San Francisco. He was in Boston. That they got into a fight on the phone one night, and he had her committed to a mental institution in San Francisco. When he got her released, they went and resumed their affair. Really, and I've seen all the chats. There's no, you know, this isn't a secret, man. I've seen all the chat logs. I've seen the pictures. I've seen the emails. I've seen everything.
Okay.
So ultimately, we decide we're going to go after Keith Abloh with a lawsuit. Okay. Now it kind of fell through because at the time my attorney was working on the Stormy Daniels thing, and it was all hell was breaking loose when all this was going on. So we had to kind of put things on pause for a while and bring in some other attorneys. But my report on Dr. Keith Abloh and his behavior in this situation is what got his license pulled. Okay.
Okay.
Now, what happens next is the big event in this story is we find out that for some reason, Hunter Biden went to live with Dr. Keith Abloh for 3 months. Now, you know, you got to wonder why this came about and why he wound up living with Dr. Keith Abloh. But if you look, they have similar interests, okay, as I've seen in the emails and the chats. They've got very similar interests, okay?
Well, now, see, it's the thing. These guys will hook up with each other and, like, just become roomies for a while. This is the kind of thing that happens when, you know, they're doing the you and I both know about this with the, you know, little meth circles and a lot of this BDSM stuff. They get together. They decide, hey, let's share a house. We'll do it all in one place. I mean, this is what they do,
you
right?
Think so? Because it really because the amount of money both of those guys had, they could have got an Airbnb. They could have got a house next door. You know, it just seemed very odd to me that he would go live there for 3 months, you know?
Yeah, but they do this temporarily where they control the situation completely because they own the property. And then that's that. I mean, I'm not saying it's their primary residence, but they have places where they just kind of shack up for a little while, seems like to me. That happens often.
Well, in the meantime, two other victims of Abloh came forward with a lawsuit, and they prevailed and got some money out of him. And once again, his license was taken away from his license to practice psychology or psychiatry. Hunter Biden goes to live with him. And Hunter Biden, for some reason, leaves behind his laptop and some other material too. It was like a cell phone, a day planner, a diary. A lot of material was left behind at Abloh's house. Mm. Okay. So now the next big event that happens is then someone we hear the big story about the computer repair place and Biden's laptop, and then that big press conference and that side of the guy's computer repair place there. The next big thing that happens is there's a book launching party for Bradley Birkenfeld in Manhattan. Now, who's at that party? Giuliani's at that party. Bernie Kerik's at that party. Costello, Giuliani's attorney Costello's at that party. And Keith Abloh's brother is at that party. Bo Deedle's at that party.
Well, of course, Bodeagle's at that party. I mean, yeah. You know, and just really quick, a chatter does want to know about the Natalie Biden thing. So, you know, just roll that into this as you go. Go ahead.
Okay. And his daughter, the daughter says all kinds of creepy stuff, that she had to go into therapy and she got addicted to drugs because of her father's bizarre behavior around her. I believe they were taking showers together or something. It's just, listen. And my conclusion, my estimation of Joe Biden, we've seen the videos on him. We've heard the stuff he talks about. He's been accused credibly by adult women of being abused. We've seen him with his making out with his own granddaughter. Okay. Now that was exclusive to Las Vegas when we saw that, when those pictures first came out. He's kissing this kid on the lips and they're hanging out on a plane together. Very bizarre stuff with Biden. I think there's every indication there that this is a sick, sick, sick household where the brother is married, hanging out with the, his brother's widow. Okay. You know, this isn't normal. None of this is normal. Okay.
Right. You're talking about Bo Biden's widow.
Right. Yeah. What's going on with all of that? And then Hunter is not allowed to be around his niece, you know, because he says he's walking around naked smoking crack. You know, a lot of the stuff that came out of here is just incredible.
Right.
But it's not what I have firsthand knowledge of. Okay. What I have firsthand exclusive knowledge of is the chain of custody on his laptop. Okay. So there at the party, the book signing party, Abloh's brother approaches Birkenfeld and Bodil, as far as I know, and some other people there in the room too. I guess he was trying to peddle this stuff to everybody in the room who would listen. And he put the price of $2 million on that laptop. He wanted $2 million to monetize that laptop. Now, this comes out of Birkenfeld's own mouth in my recorded interview. I got him on my show, you know, because I invited him to come talk about his book. I was so excited about this book. But I really wanted to get some answers about this laptop because I had heard this story. So what happens is Birkenfeld and Bodil go down to visit Abloh to negotiate over the laptop. They want to purchase it. They come to an agreement to terms over the purchase of this laptop. Now, people who don't know who Bodil is, there's a movie called Bad Lieutenant with Harvey Keitel, okay? And that cop is basically the Bodil story. He's even in the movie. I think he's like an executive producer of the movie and stuff like that. But those are all his cases. And he was a big gambler and stuff like that, you know. And I almost think that because at the end, Keitel kills himself. I kind of think that Bo won that bet and didn't kill himself. Okay. But me and Bo were close friends back in the 80s. We used to hang out down at the Doral Hotel there across the street from the Waldorf. But anyway, back to the laptop. Big Bo and Birkenfeld go down to see Abloh, and they want to negotiate the price on the laptop. And negotiations fall through. So what happens? The very next day, the Drug Enforcement Agency comes down and raids the house and takes the laptop. They also raid a local pharmacy and take some stuff from there, too. But it seems
they take that from Abloh's house?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Dude, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Dude, no. But that's the, you know, they go down there to buy the laptop. Okay, well, okay, we're gonna, but the negotiations fall through. And then the next thing you know, someone gets a judge to sign a search warrant. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I ask Birkenfeld, I said, oh, my goodness, I said, what's going on there? He goes, yeah, I think they had my phones tapped. He's telling me. And I says, well, Brad, you know, don't you think if there's someone who could get to a judge to get, you know, a friendly DEA agent to go in and get this laptop, don't you think it would be somebody like Giuliani or Bo?
Yes, too. I mean, the speed of that, Ed, this is not, you know, I'm going to make an anonymous call.
Right.
No. That's because the speed of that is impossible to go from. I mean, seriously, I mean, tell people about that real fast. I mean, if you're saying the next day,
yeah.
I mean, that's not something that happens if you or I decide, you know, John Q, whoever the hell, calls up and says, you know, I know that there's crack in this house over here. You're not going to get a warrant and the door kicked in the next day. That ain't happening. Okay.
No, this is all high level hardball. Right. But look at the people involved. You know, you got Giuliani, you got Carrick, and others too that I'm still going to be interviewing this week. I don't want to mention their name, but high level CIA types and stuff were all at that book signing meeting, that book launching party. Okay, for Birkenfeld. And like I said, man, you can listen to the whole Birkenfeld. It's in my Patreon. You can listen to the whole Spiegel show there and the whole, what's that thing, the press conference. It's all there in the Patreon.
Amen.
So Hunter Biden manages to get his laptop back. He goes to his attorneys. You know, it's a search warrant. It's his property in someone else's house. It's seized by this search warrant. He gets it back. Now, Birkenfeld tells me, he says, it had to be the same stuff, and he thinks it was the deep state and the DEA who somehow took this material off of this laptop and put it on the other laptop over there at the computer repair place. But if you're just looking at this logically, you know, the people who wanted the laptop, you know, ultimately did wind up with the laptop, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Shut this down, you stick it in an evidence locker and it never has to come out because nobody calls for it. That's the end of it.
That's an interesting thing, too, because even the guy, the fellow over there at Mr. Mack over there at the computer repair place, he was, first of all, too, his whole story about how he was retrieving data from this hard drive and he saw pictures on there that disturbed him. You're not going to be sitting there looking at what you recover from a computer. It's just, especially if you do it for a living, you're doing it 8-10 hours a day. You're not going to be sitting there recovering one file at a time, one picture at a time. That's what people see in the movies. And he said that he was so disturbed by the lack of police response that he went and made another report to the FBI. You got to hear the press conference, okay, when this guy is – he's answering all the questions. But as soon as they get back to the chain of custody, it's no comment, no comment, no comment.
Okay. Oh, all right. So what do we have here, though? He's got it. It goes. Now we have the transfer, and somebody said I confabulated, by the way, the two things, either the image or the laptop itself. Okay, fine. But this is what the way I read it as it came out. I'm not saying that I've got great knowledge of this. I'm asking Ed for it. The other thing is that the chatter that asked about Natalie Biden,
right,
is saying that that's Hunter's niece that they were asking about. So just letting you know those two things. But this is wild because – What does this ultimately mean? Somebody's trying to make sure that this stays quiet. Well, now it can't because they're admitting it exists. At certain points, people are saying it didn't even exist. Giuliani's trying to make something out of it. Now, I don't trust things that come out of Giuliani's mouth. I never did, to be honest with you, because I knew he lied about things directly, publicly, all the time. But now this is in a weird area. What does this ultimately mean? And what do we know about it that, you know, like we could tell people that maybe they can't get someplace else?
Some of the main things that I feel are really important with this story is once again, whatever was on that original laptop, Keith Ablow thought was worth $2 million, okay? A lot of stuff crosses my desk, and I'll think it's worth a lot of money, but it's never worth that much. This is a lot, okay? Now, We have everything that's on that laptop, okay, has been produced to the public through Bannon and his Chinese friend over there. So all of it's been released, and it was released in a bizarre way, too, a little haphazard, you know, with these clips coming out over a course of a day, getting shot down off of Twitter and Facebook as they were going up, as quickly as they were going up. I think – here's what I think happened, okay?
Okay.
I think that Ablow tried to sell the laptop. Someone on this team brought in the judge, brought in the DEA. They got the laptop. They made a copy of the hard drive. They gave it to these guys. They gave the original laptop back to Hunter Biden. They brought this other laptop now with the new hard drive. They brought it over to the computer repair guy, right? We know a lot of material has been released, but I think that some material, the real good blackmail material has been held back. Why wouldn't it be? Of course it would be. Mm-hmm. Now, so that also tells me, too, that these pictures, these ridiculous pictures, which just look like Photoshop and crap, there's no way for those to get out because anybody who would have this incredibly valuable material wouldn't just leak it out for stupidity's sake. You know, like people don't take this stuff and take it to Reddit and just, you know, post it on Reddit. You know, there's a market for this kind of stuff out there. So any major blackmail stuff is still out there in the possession of these guys doing the blackmail.
Okay.
That's where we are with that.
All right. So ultimately, just so we make this real clear, I mean, who does it seem is trying to blackmail who here? Because there's been other allegations out there, and I'm not sure, again, that there might be other materials on here. Now, one of the chatters asked about the Hillary Clinton snuff film. I don't think that's been alleged to be on the laptop,
but
there's other films on there that might be tied to Clinton one way or another that could have been on there, or other videos, other images, You know, there's a lot of possibilities and a lot of rumor about this. And so, you know, what else could it be, or do we have an idea directly about what we're talking about here outside of the fact that it's some blackmail material? It could be anything from, you know, something that
financial deals, especially, yeah. You know, yeah.
Okay. Well, so that would be the most innocuous thing, honestly. You know, financial deals and corruption and buying influence, I would say yawn, you know. Okay, but maybe it's a major deal. Maybe it's something that did cost lives. And maybe it's something that's way too embarrassing. Okay, I get that. But, I mean, is that the kind of thing that you think would still be held back at this point?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I think things are being held back, okay? And they're being held back in this circle of Bannon, Giuliani, Deedle, and Burke. You know, I guess, I don't know who would have it too, but people on that Trump team there. Now, if the listener, I should pull up your chat room and talk to this guy. If your listener is talking about
chat room, yeah, go ahead and get it if you want.
Is the listener talking about the Anthony Weiner laptop and Hillary's snuff films on the Anthony Weiner laptop?
Well, see, there's been allegations about, you know, stuff being all across these guys.
Right.
I see.
Let me say about Anthony Weiner. Okay.
Okay. Just really quick though, I'm going to give you the link to the chat, just the chat room, which is a Chatango chat room, really fast.
Okay.
In our chat. So if you want to click on it and go, just take a look. Go ahead. I think that's it. Yeah, there you go. That's the Chatango link. If you want to go look at the text yourself and follow them for the next 25 minutes or so. Because they're throwing a lot of things in there, and you know me, I don't read that quick.
I got it.
So there you have it if you want to look at it. But this is interesting to me because, of course, then what is the deep and dark, right? I mean, again, that early allegation about the 10-year-old, that's the kind of thing that if somebody splashed it out there, and see, that becomes my next question. If that kind of blackmail material is available, then how come some of it has not been leaked out? You know, just a little bit of it. I mean, if they let some of it out.
No. If you got blackmail stuff, you don't want to leak it at all. Okay. But getting back, first of all, I know one of these characters in here, Tiger, in your chat room over there. He was calling me before. But the thing, back to, were you talking about the Wienergate? Yeah. Spitzer and Wienergate and all that stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Just to get back a little bit here with the Wienergate story, okay? Because that's my whole thing. Well, those are all my people, Wienergate, okay? I did the first cell phone in Wienergate with Maria, the poker player here in Vegas, over there in Vegas, okay? Right. And then Sydney Leathers and stuff like that, her agent was Gina Rodriguez, who was my agent, who was also the woman who put together the Stormy Daniels deal. It's a small group here, you know? So,
fair enough. But I do want to ask you about the Stormy Daniels ruling thing before we're done. But go ahead.
Okay, good, good. Okay, I love that ruling. But the thing is, okay, what do you call it? So I don't believe the story about a snuff film being on Anthony Weiner's laptop. Okay, I don't believe that story, and for reasons not just and about all these suicides and murders around that too. I don't believe it because my buddy was the PBA, the union rep on that case. So I don't believe that has much weight.
Okay, fair enough.
What do you want to say about Stormy Daniels?
Oh, no, I just was going to ask what you thought about this whole now she's is got to pay back Trump $300,000 or whatever in legal expenses and, you know, that recent ruling. It was like 2 days ago, right?
Well, as far as I know, the one about paying back Trump was a long time ago. I think what happened recently was she won the lawsuit against Avenatti.
No, but they had this ruling where they decided that she owes him for legal.
Right. Okay, here's what happened with all that. Okay.
Because that was only in the past couple of days, I think.
Okay, there might have been an appeal and then was affirmed because she lost that case immediately. Okay, it was a ridiculous lawsuit. What happened was, okay, is Stormy Daniels had a great deal, okay, and Stormy Daniels had a great lawyer. Keith Davidson was taking care of all of her problems, got her a lot of money, okay? It was negotiated through Gina. And then later on, Gina and Stormy went back to Keith and said, hey, we want to go back and get more money. And Keith says, you're crazy. He says, you're crazy. You can't do that. And he names some certain things that we're going to – there's a great book called The Fixers, okay? And if you want the whole fuller name, it has all of these good details in there. I had the writers on my show.
Okay.
New York Times and Wall Street Journal writers. Now, so he told them, you can't go back for more money because this is exactly what will happen and what will go wrong, okay, and how they'll – screw us. They went, Gina and Stormy went, met with Avenatti in Gina's apartment on their couch, okay, with her ex-boyfriend, okay, and they came up with this scheme that they were going to go back and try and get more money out of Trump.
Okay.
Then this piece of garbage Avenatti goes and turns around and sues my client, okay, Keith Davidson, saying that he was double dipping or whatever. I don't know even what their crazy allegations were. So they lost all that, okay. Avenatti wound up in prison, okay. Avenatti wound up with a serious conviction. Now, we know all along that if Stormy went back and she violated her non-disclosure agreement. Of course she has to pay. You know, that was a no-brainer. And then what just happened was, though, is Avenatti lost. I think it was a civil suit against Stormy was suing him because he stole another $300,000 from her that she had for a book deal. And he just stole the money. And right. He forged her name. He identity theft.
Mm-hmm. No, I knew about that. I'm just saying that this recent ruling, it's like a lot of people are like, oh, look, Trump was vindicated. See, there was nothing to the Stormy Daniels.
No, not even a little bit. No, not even a little bit. I don't know if there's anybody out there that still denies that Trump was sleeping with Stormy Daniels. Everybody admits it now. We have Michael Cohen.
There are still defenders of his that will tell me, oh, no, that had nothing to do with nothing. See, it was all a lie. She has to pay him back legal fees, see? I'm like, oh, wow. No, you guys are missing the point of this. So that's why I wanted to ask you about it. Sorry. And we've sidetracked away from the Hunter Biden thing. So, you know, I'm sorry, but it just.
That's good.
I knew you had good dirt on it, so I wanted to ask you. So it's amazing this Avenatti, because people got, you know, all enamored with him. And I'm going, you know, I appreciate it. I see he's got a vowel at the end of his name and all that. And he definitely has balls. But other than that. You know, he's exactly the reason why I hate lawyers. I mean, seriously, I knew that right away. And, of course, he proved it by trying to muscle Nike, of all people. That was really hilarious. I don't know who has that in mind. These are people that have no problem with, you know, child slavery and everything else. You think they're going to be worried about an American lawyer? What the hell? Are you serious?
Well, you know, his partner in that deal was Mark Garagos, who walked away without a scratch.
Of course. Well, he always does, don't they, Ed?
Yeah.
Anyway. But
Avenatti is not even liked by other lawyers, though. His own partners and stuff, and nobody likes him.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, look, he just screams scumbag. I mean, but anyway, back to this whole thing with Biden, and I asked this question to begin with, is, you know, really, ultimately, if there is criminal stuff on there, which I'm assuming there is, plenty of it, you know, is anybody gonna get, you know, held accountable? Is anybody gonna be in trouble? Is there gonna be a reckoning, you know? Because a lot of those people that really want to see Biden nailed, you know, it's like, oh, this is the downfall of, you know, Uncle Joe. This is the downfall of the hair smelling, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, come on, don't hold your breath, you know, really. But what are your thoughts there? You think that there could be some, real action here that maybe
No, I think whatever deal's been made has been made on that, you know, and now it's off the front pages. And, you know, I did a show not too long ago. I guess it was after Maxwell got convicted and, you know, my 9 years on the Epstein case, you know. And I don't feel any satisfaction from the way the whole Epstein, even with Brunel dead and Epstein, you know, dead and Maxwell convicted. I get no satisfaction from any of that.
Yeah.
Especially many of the witnesses in the Maxwell case were doing the same thing she was doing, you know. And
there was problems with those witnesses. And then I had Addy Ads on last night. He was talking about that whole thing with that juror and the action, you know, against him because he lied about what was it? If you were a victim, question number 50 on the questionnaire and all this. And I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, this whole greasy, nasty thing ends up with what? Just Ghislaine? You know, going to prison for a little while? That's not much to it. And meanwhile, nobody's even talking about the lawsuits and everything that's going on down in the Caribbean, right? So I don't know what's happening with his estate. Where did his money actually go? And nobody's ever satisfactorily answered where his money came from in the first place, in my mind.
Well, okay. I was just talking to Hoffenberg today, Stephen Hoffenberg, who was Epstein's former partner. Virgin Islands, there is some new movement in the Virgin Islands right now. Where the money came from, we're pretty sure the money came from Tower Financial, you know? All that money that was stolen from Tower Financial, where'd it go? It's pretty much the same amount that Epstein walked away with. What happened with that was, and by the way, too, people don't realize, you know, Giuliani was the corporate counsel for Tower Financial. And when stuff started to hit the fan, he sided with Epstein and Enzyk and the other guy, I forget his name, and Hoffenberg was left holding a bag. He went to prison for 9 years on all that. But I forget what you were asking me about. I got to start writing notes while you're talking.
I'm with you a little because I know we're going to run out of time, and I want to make sure we cover everything. But, I mean, ultimately, you know, and by the way, I just personally signed up while you were talking for your Patreon, and I gave the link in the Ocelli chat room. I'll include it with the show notes as well. Go over there and get this stuff. Of course, a little warning, there's some disturbing-looking images over there just to let you guys know.
Yeah. Stephen Avery, yeah. We pretty much got that exclusively the other night. Stephen Avery perving on his own daughter and his niece. A text message about how these girls would come home with hickeys after visiting him.
Yeah, to make killer or whatever that Netflix documentary, that guy you're talking about, yeah?
Right, to make a murder, yeah. Hey, by the way, real quick, one of the other things I just did exclusively on the Epstein case was Heather Braden came back on the show, and she was her agent at one point was Jean-Luc Brunel, was her agent. So nice. You know how that there's that whole story about how Steve Mnuchin's name wound up as a registered agent on one of Jean-Luc Brunel's modeling agencies. Mm-hmm. And he says, oh, my goodness, I don't know how that happened, but I am an attorney. Maybe, all total bullshit, man. She comes on the show. She says, I remember this guy. This guy was hanging around all the time. Okay, so we have a firsthand eyewitness who can place him there as being friends with all these characters.
Well, you know, another thing that people tell me I'm full of crap on all the time is I say, you know, you ought to look at the Trump modeling thing that was going on for a little bit. And they go, ah, come on, you just hate Trump. And I'm like, no, I'm just telling you, just like, you know, people want to talk about the mob busting lawyer Giuliani and all that. Yeah. It's like, yeah, take a look at the mobsters he didn't bust. OK. And they go, ah, you're just crazy. You don't like these guys because they're Republicans. I'm like, hey, you forget I'm equal opportunity about all this stuff, you know. And it's a really bizarre world we're treading in here as we're talking about all this stuff, Ed.
I got a great story about Giuliani. OK.
Sure.
OK. It involves Leroy and Nikki Barnes. OK. Now,
hey, Leroy, those people don't know. Okay, Nikki Barnes would be the other big heroin dealer in the movie American Gangster. Real person. This is who we're talking about. Okay, go ahead, Ed. I'm sorry.
He was played by Cuba Gooding Jr.
He sure was. Cuba did a good job, from what I understand and from what I remember about Nikki Barnes. Except Cuba's a little better looking than Nikki Barnes was. But anyways, go ahead.
Well, if you remember, Nikki Barnes was arrested for trying to bribe a police officer, and as luck would have it, as a small world, that police officer was my former partner. Okay, he was the father of the best man at my wedding. Okay, who is a Bobby Harris Sr. Who was bribed by Nikki Barnes there and testified against him. And so what happened was, and there's an audio tape on YouTube that anybody can listen to this, man. Okay? What happened was Nikki Barnes was sitting in jail. He had already been convicted. And he was ordering stuff on the outside. His wife was sleeping with one of his ex-partners, okay? So he sent some guys over there to that nightclub to go kill the ex-partner. Right, but instead of going in there and shooting the ex-partners, they went down, they sat down, they ate, and they drank, and they partied with him. So Nikki Barnes is left in a spot. He had nobody out there doing things for him while he's sitting there in jail. So there's a recording where he's talking to Rudy Giuliani's office. Mm-hmm. And he says, the reason why I'm coming to you And I'm cooperating with you is only for one reason. So it's because, you know, there's people out there that are supposed to be doing things for me, but they're doing things against me. So that's my motivation in coming to you.
Right.
Can't be any more clear than that. He comes up with a deal with the SDNY. A couple of days later, two white guys go into that same nightclub and kill his ex-partners. And then a couple of days after that, Rudy Giuliani does a press conference out in front of the nightclub. We're working on this. We're working hard. We're tracking him down. We're going to catch him.
Just so people know, the nightclub you're talking about, the place in question, not typically a place where two white guys just walk in the door randomly.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Nicky Barnes didn't have two white guys working for him.
No, he did not. No, nobody working for Nicky Barnes was white. Just as far as I know, I've never heard of a single one. Frank Lucas had white people working for him, but Nicky Barnes did not. Okay, just for the record. Anyway, and you and I unfortunately know a lot more about that sort of business in New York City than maybe the average bear. Okay, and the fact is that there's a lot of dark and dirty, and it's funny because Giuliani's out there doing his press conference. I'm sure they were working real hard on figuring out which one of their guys actually did it. Did I say that out loud? Okay, you know. Just saying, when you cut deals, it's not always the stuff that's on paper. Anyhow, leave it there. Giuliani's a weird case, though, especially when people go, oh, he busted the mob and this and that. And it's like, yeah, okay, on one level, but still, take a look at who he didn't bust. Take a look at who he was making deals with. Take a look at how some people got out of certain things. It's, you know. Some people's porno and prostitution was allowed to thrive still, even when Giuliani was supposedly clearing it up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Some people's, not everybody's. Okay. So, ask yourself who benefits, right? Anyways, so Ed, with the last 10 minutes, what else do we need to hit them with? And by the way, I got to have you on more often because this is way too much fun.
Well, a couple of things. In your chat room here, one guy is asking me how come I don't believe in Bad Wolf, okay? Who claims that he has Epstein's hard drive with all this stuff, okay? I dealt with this guy. I had him on the show. I asked him if he knew anything about Epstein. He says, well, honestly, I don't know anything about Epstein. Then a year later, he's selling his whole story about how he has these hard drives. I've checked it out with other people. Nobody believes it. As a matter of fact, at the time when he was telling me he had these hard drives, if there was anything to it, I could have had a first-class ticket to Russia. I would have been over there with a check to buy these hard drives. Never happened. Then he's talking to another guy. You have his talking about the Sarah Lawrence College sex cult leader, Lawrence Ray. I spoke to Lawrence Ray. It turns out that Lawrence Ray is an interesting guy. He was the best man at Bernie Kerik's wedding. He paid for Bernie Kerik's wedding. The guy is a sex trafficker. There's no doubt about that. How I came into contact with him was through A.J. Weberman, who wrote the book Coup d'Etat. Oh, you know A.J. Weberman wrote the book Coup d'Etat. Yeah, right.
On America, right.
So he also wrote a book about Rudy Giuliani and Rudy Giuliani's best friends, who's a pedophile priest. He has him on the payroll at his law office over there. Mm-hmm. And so Lawrence Ray was the source of a lot of the information for that stuff. And Lawrence Ray was the source that got Bernie Kerik put in prison. I don't know if anybody knows that story.
Yeah, well, there you go. See, Bernie Kerik is still one of these guys. They're like, oh, look, he's the great police captain. And like they just totally omit part of his history and also don't look at his ties to not only organized criminal or different things, by the way, not just Italians, but, you know, ties to different organized criminal businesses, let's call them, and his ties to the intelligence community. Nobody talks about that with Kerik. Okay. And it's I can verify his ties to the intelligence community. I'm not going to do it publicly here, but I will tell you that it can be verified if you dig. So anyway, go ahead, Ed.
Well, there's one more story about Kerik. You know, when he was police, when he was the corrections department, he was the head of the corrections department, and he left that office, to go become police commissioner. He stole all the art and the furniture from his office. And then later on, too, you know, he stole an apartment. That someone donated an apartment for 9/11 cops to go and rest, you know, and he took the apartment for himself and his girlfriend. Bernie Kerik is a real character, man. And by the way, too, he ran the January 6th war room, too, on his own credit card there. That's a whole other
thing. Yeah, I mean, and then you can get into him going over to the Middle East to train people. And, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on with that guy.
Well, he was only over there for like a month.
Yeah, no, but he got paid real well, though, didn't he, for that month? I'm saying, look, nobody gets paid in that world unless they're worth something, all right? And these are brass tacks. And the thing is, oh, man, it just goes so much deeper. So anyway, before I ask you to promote your stuff again, and again, like I said, you know, the Patreon link is in the chat room. I just went over and signed up. You know, and look, I've followed Ed's stuff for years. Him and I have worked together on a couple things. Full disclosure, he's my friend, and I just love talking to him anyway. It's great to hear somebody who talks about as fast as I do and with a similar sort of accent. So it's great to have you on the show, Ed. We could just shoot the breeze, but I mean, what is the punchline to the joke of the Hunter Biden laptop? Cause again, will anything come of it? I don't think so. You know, I don't know what the deal is exactly, and I don't know how much it's really worth. I think the guy, either he had bad advice about trying to get $2 million on it, or maybe he didn't know what he had. I don't know. But if it's that big, then, $2 million's an undersale. You know what I mean? So what else should we know before we close this out?
Oh boy, that's a good question. Let's see, 6 minutes. Well, we do know that the chain of custody is shady as hell. And once again, to someone who had the laptop in their possession, put the price tag of $2 million on it. These other guys went down there, traveled down there to get it. So they must have thought there was something of value on it too. Now, I know you're saying that financial dealings aren't enough, you know, but they kind of are. If you have information that'll screw up someone's financial dealings. But if you have someone's laptop, you know, you have access to, you know, their passwords to their bank accounts. You have all kinds of, you know, glorious information. You have no idea all the stuff that's in there. So yeah, $2 million, even in a situation like this, opposition research, I could see it happening. But I think all deals are done on that. Okay, there may be some reoccurring payments going on or something like that, but I think all deals are done and we're not going to see anything new. And for sure, all this nonsense, these pictures that are being floated around now, it's just all Photoshop and crap.
Right, exactly. So last question, which comes from a Skype listener. They want to know, what are the chances, in Ed's opinion, that this is actually the Clintons leveraging the Bidens as opposed to the Trumps looking for dirt? I don't know how to couch that question any differently. I just read it. What is your opinion on that, Ed?
Wait, one more time, that the Clintons are doing this to blackmail the Bidens?
That the Clintons are the ones that wind up with this because they're the ones that are actually running the blackmail scheme against the Bidens in order to leverage him out and to make sure that he's subdued in office or something like this. They're saying I tried to read part of the question. Yeah. It's really long.
Well, it seems to me that all these guys, they're all CIA, you know, like Obama and Bush and all these characters, Clinton, were all CIA. And they've got their own deals that they're working on. I don't think you need a lot of pressure, you know, for the Clintons to get the Bidens to do what they want them to. I don't think the Clintons have as much power as they once had, although he is trying to revive the Clinton Global Initiative just recently. And I'm sure they have a lot of influence to peddle, but clearly not what they had a few years ago.
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah. Well, anyways, again, one more time, of course, OppermanReport.com. Or is it The Opperman? I have it bookmarked. What is it, The Opperman Report or OppermanReport.com?
I'm pretty sure it's Opperman Report, but if you just put in Opperman Report, everything comes up. The Patreon comes up and Spreaker's. I like to send people to Spreaker.com for the podcast because that's where you get the best quality. It's the only place that really pays me anymore. I'm not paid on YouTube. And YouTube deletes about 75% of my content.
Yeah, yeah. too. He can't stay on YouTube if you're doing anything outside of the ordinary. I mean, unless you're, unboxing candy or something, you can be on YouTube, I guess. But other than that, forget it. If you're on there, I mean, the only weird thing is that Russell Brand has actually been saying some pretty interesting things and getting away with it on YouTube, and I can't figure that one out. But other than that, really, you get shut down over there. So, yeah, you got to go to the independent platforms. You go to Ed's website. You go to his Spreaker. You go to his Patreon, and you'll be able to get the information that is not allowed everywhere. Okay, so that's something to remember. Plus, I'll give social media for you and all that, because I know you appreciate people reaching out to you, bringing you information, or letting you know what they think of stuff that's going on that you're putting out there. I know you really appreciate a lot of feedback and stuff like that, so I encourage everybody to reach out to Ed.
No, don't do that. Don't reach out to me. Just listen to the show. Don't listen to Chuck, man. Don't email me, man. Don't message me at all.
Okay. Gee, Ed.
I'll tell you something else. So, you know, if you're out there, you know, you need to hire a PI, you know, just keep it short, man. Nice bullet points. You send someone 10, 20 pages with links, no one's going to read that, man. You know, you gotta be short and concise to the point. Just catch my attention. Oh. I'll help you out.
Yeah, no, definitely. Look, I've said this before. I'll say it again. You know, and I've been divorced once. And well, I'll tell you, if Ed Opperman was on the ex's team, I would have given up even more than half of my soul. So, because whatever dirt there was, it would have been found. Because Ed is damn good at it. So, I do never want to see you on the opposite side of the legal system from me. Okay. I'm just saying. No. Although it would be kind of funny. I mean, I'd have a laugh with you no matter what you did, but I know that I would probably have to just be very sure that I was giving up everything all by myself, because otherwise you're going to get it. So that's, that's how I'm looking at it, Ed. Anything else you want to say on your way out the door, brother?
Keep an eye out on the Matt Gaetz story. It's going to be huge.
Ooh, you know, there's something. I thought that kind of disappeared.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no. So, on my Patreon, I have a four-hour video of Matt Gaetz's buddy having a four-hour standoff with police where he's talking about planting IEDs in his lawn. And by the way, too, these are the cops who are his friends who came out they interfered with the marshals when the marshals were going to come out and get him.
The guy they were Venmoing back and forth with hookers and all that, right?
Yes, and he's talking about being dope sick. They were breaking into the DMV in the middle of the night to steal driver's licenses to give to their teenage girlfriends, man. Sure. These characters. There's big stuff coming out on this. There's going to be a big, big story coming out in a magazine, and I'm going to have the first radio show about it.
Excellent. So, yeah, look around for Opperman Report and OppermanReport.com. Ed Opperman, again, brother, you got to come on more often, because it's way too much fun, even though it is the greasy part of the dirt. I appreciate you, man.
You got to get on earlier in the day, man, so I can stay awake. Your show comes out. But Chuck, thank you so much. It was great having you coming back. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Ed Opperman, everybody, in the next hour, we're gonna switch gears, but don't worry, the Ocelli Effect will continue after this.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to the Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
But I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles are just really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away.
That's what oils rule.
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market, WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.
Why? The Vietnam War
by author Mike Swanson.
Uncle, do you remember that time when Nibiru, also known as Planet X, was going to get within the gravitational pull of the Earth and cause mass commotion and chaos?
More that. More commotion. More confusion. It goes into the confusion thing. Hey, going nut, he's going back, and it's going crazy.
I hate being confused like that.
But that's exactly how he works it.
It is, but at the Ocelli.com radio network, you're never confused.
No, it's straight to the point.
Straight talk.
And I like that idea.
It's about time. Forget this Nibiru stuff and listen to the Ocelli.com radio network.
.com, and he'd get it right where you want to hear it at. Right straight ahead, instead of ding-donging back and forth here.
Ocelli.com.
Charging a man with murder in this place was like handing out speeding tickets at the Indy 500.
Charges in Florida.
And the un-Nazi the world forever.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now at Ocelli.com, but you could be some other time, some other place, and all that good stuff. Welcome to it. And Lori Simpson is supposed to join me right now. The possibility, though, that something could have turned badly personally is in play here. She was going to discuss the individuals that are kind of, you know, sort of similar to what I talked about with our guest last week about how people get trapped in the hospital and have no way out. So she was going to discuss that with the COVID reality and all this, but it does appear as though maybe something happened, so perhaps she'll join us later, and if not, we'll figure out something to do here. As we go through this hour, I want to mention that, you know, Ed Opperman, I did rush him a bit, but, you know, he didn't want to stay on more than an hour, so otherwise I might have kept Ed a bit because there was a lot more questions I could have asked. But I stand by this attitude I have about the Biden laptop, that the idea that you know, I mean, it's got to be deep and dark for any of these business dealings and corrupt, you know, stuff being done by the children of politicians or politicians directly. I mean, half the time people can't even forensically figure out what's gone on. And I don't know. It doesn't have a big effect. I find that there's a lot of innuendo and rumor about these things. And people often claim that a whole bunch of stuff exists until we find out that it doesn't, or the actual deep, dark evidence disappears somewhere else. Okay. So, you know, the Biden laptop thing, I don't know. I don't know. Could it be the big bad? Could it actually take down Joe Biden? Who is it that would really want it? A lot of questions there. And look, whenever you're dealing with these people that have made it to the upper echelons of power, I never have any faith that they're going to be punished. So what can I say? I stand by all that, but still, it's an interesting thing to look at. And I say bring it all out into the light. I don't care which side of the political aisle they're on. They all need to be called out. And like I've said many a time, 500 perp walks outside of D.C. would be nice. So what do we have else in the news? I got to say, it's, you know, clogged up a lot with what's going on in Ukraine. And I've got a different attitude about it than some of my other contemporaries, apparently. Of course, that's part of what got me fired from TNT. But anyhow, you know, our friend Amir, by the by, in case anybody's curious about what's going on with him, he's had to evacuate the little strategically insignificant village that he was in. Okay, and had to be moved elsewhere in the country because of what's going on. And I say again that I stand only with the idea that war in and of itself and organized violence by the state against innocent people, you know, is something that I despise, decry, and at all times oppose. Although I do recognize that on occasion, other organized gangs of violence, one way or another, in military uniforms do pose a threat. But this whole thing with the back and forth, I think nobody's telling the truth about what's gone on. I think that there is a lot of pain, a lot of agony that right now the major corporate media is dining out on, because through sympathy and through the horror show that never, ever gets close to the people that are tuning in, they're able to benefit. So I see it as a ratings grab. I see it as, you know, a lot of virtue signaling. These people never care about the conflicts that claim lives, about, you know, the individuals in Yemen who are, you know, dying of thirst. They don't care about that. They don't care about the genocide occurring there. They certainly don't ever want to oppose the genocide going on in Israel or Palestine. Okay, more correctly spoken, they don't want to talk about genocides. Because genocide is business, and business is good. And it is part of the military-industrial complex's business plan to at all times participate in, support, and make sure they surreptitiously train lots of death squads everywhere. Because, after all, they all have to be supplied with stuff, and there's a lot of money to be made. But anyway, what's going on in Ukraine is clogging up everything. And do I believe all of the negativity about what's going on with Russia? No, but at the same time, I'm taking the word of some of the people that have come out and been the spokespeople who have tried to make certain points, et cetera. And got to tell you that the idea that people are worried about the nuclear option is something that, I don't know, I've been worried about a bit almost all my life. No fear. But why do I want an idiot to destroy the planet I'm on? For no good damn reason. Anyways, I might be being joined by someone right now to find out some other news. And let's see what we can do. Anyway, Nature Boy, are you with me, brother? Maybe, maybe not. It's going to be... Oh. Yes, I can. Yes, I can, okay. Sir.
I'm flipping dials right now, so sorry about that. Sorry about that, and all the listeners out there.
No worries. Listen, it's live. We're without a net. It is what it is, and you know me. I'm not going to edit this out. So here we are. I was talking about things just generally in the news anyway, and giving a few of my thoughts. We did intend to have Lori Simpson on, but it does appear as though she is unavailable.
Okay, no, I'm here.
You are here. Lori.
I am here. Yes.
Oh, how beautiful to hear your voice.
It's okay.
Oh.
Oh, sorry. I did not know you had joined us. We tried to join you into the call a while ago, and we're live. So yes. How are you? How are you, Lori?
I'm okay. Thank you for asking.
I had a bit of fear that maybe something had changed in your personal situation and it might have taken priority, in which case, you know, I would totally understand. You blew off my little radio show. That would be fine. But let's get into it since we've got about 44 minutes or so. I want to just let you speak about what's going on and I guess introduce yourself and tell us about your personal situation that might have something to do with the current problem of, let's call it COVID captivity. How about that? Go ahead.
Yes. So my husband has been in Nova Fair Oaks for 77 days. He went in with aspiration pneumonia, and because they wanted to write COVID all over the chart to gain some CARE Act money, they called it COVID pneumonia, even though he had tested negative four times before he went in, including the morning we called the ambulance. He had aspirated on the 30th of December. I heard it. I'm aware of what aspiration sounds like, and I was there doing chest work with him at the time. It should have been a 10-day stay. He's still in there, 77 days. We tried to take him out against medical advice around February 8th, but he ended up with a chest tube because of a pneumothorax that was developed from the high-pressure BiPAP machine. They did not treat him for aspiration pneumonia for the first 33 days until we begged for an antibiotic. And I finally got the one that I asked for as a trial, and his infection markers came down every day that he was on it. But they gave him a 10-day standard protocol, and so after they stopped it, the infection markers started to rise again. So it's been a time of total decimation of his body. He is malnourished. He's lost 52 pounds. His lungs are in worse condition than when he went in. He now has a trach. He is on a vent at night. He's coming off the vent during the day. We have so much damage to recover from because of lack of standards and basically medical neglect the entire time.
Okay, so let me let you take a breath for a second, excuse me, and ask you a very sensible question in my mind, which is, look, what is the type of condition he was generally in before this problem came up? Are we talking about somebody that had COPD already, or is
no
there
comorbidities? None.
Go ahead.
He had no comorbidities. He had been traveling the world, working on embassy security for us, keeping us safe. His primary territory was Asia. He was just in India in November, no problems. So, no, he got COVID on the 19th of December, but he cleared it within 5 days because he was on prophylactic hydroxychloroquine, which is the first thing that the hospital stopped. He had used that because he traveled the country with malaria, but also for basic inflammation. We used the Frontline Critical Care Alliance protocol, Dr. Zelenko's protocol. He was recovering well, but then aspiration pneumonia set in 4 days later. I couldn't keep his oxygen levels up, and I only called the ambulance because I knew he was at risk. We tried to avoid the hospital at all costs.
Okay, fair enough. I guess one other question, if you don't mind sharing it, had he been vaccinated? Because as a government worker, it was my understanding that the majority of them had mandatorily had to accept the vaccination. And, you know, for the record, I am not vaccinated. No one in my household is vaccinated. I am clearly objecting to this, but I'm just curious if he was compelled to through his job.
No, he had no religious exemption, and the company that he worked for, even though he was embedded in the State Department, he worked as a contractor. So, no, he avoided that. I also did. I've had natural immunity since April of 2020. It's not recognized. I work in the healthcare industry, and so everyone around me is out of masks, and I'm wearing one because I'm unvaccinated. It's kind of a joke. I have a vaccine-injured son, so we've always been well aware of the dangers of many of the vaccines, not just the COVID vaccine, but we were well educated on the dangers of the COVID so-called vaccine.
Yeah, one of my sons is also injured. In my estimation, although I've never been able to prove it to others satisfactorily, apparently, but my younger son is not due to my objections to these things. But I also got sick around the same time, by the way, in 2020, which, you know, I figure, and by the way, I have not gotten sick with anything like it since. You know, I've had other issues and a couple allergies and stuff like this, but all very normal for me. And generally speaking, I live in Georgia, so not too often have I had to deal with the mask, this year or last. You know, they really relaxed quickly on it here in Georgia. So, you know, I mean, except when I had to go to the eye doctor in January, they still had these protocols. And look, I followed them. I found it silly. And even the eye doctor at a certain point was like, look, you're steaming up the lenses I'm putting in front of you. Go ahead and pull that thing down. So, you know, we went through that. But anyway, so I was just curious, you know, about what his status was before. So what you're telling me is somebody who was perfectly healthy, though, got sick. And seemed to be recovering and then had a little bit of a setback and effectively ends up in the hospital. Now, I'm hearing a lot of stories about people not being able to get out, not being able to see, you know, still receive visitation and things like that, even though the protocols for all this stuff in various places have been pulled back or changed or altered. So, you know, what are we to glean from what's happening here except I hate to put it so bluntly that, you know, a good way to get yourself more sick or dead is to go in the hospital. And believe me, I'm not wishing for an outcome like that for your husband. I'm just saying that I've heard those stories, too. So where are we at with this outside of a good place to get sick or sicker is to go to the hospital?
We're in Northern Virginia, so the protocols are very much in place. And we were aware from the very beginning that there was a bounty on his head. He ended up on a vent after they placed the first chest tube from the pneumothorax, and he got off of it in 6 days. He was well on that first day. Then they sedated him with a medication that typically is used to keep people asleep during surgery, and he couldn't clear the carbon dioxide again. So the doctor calls and said, you can make him a DNR or you can put him on the vent. That was my informed consent, total informed consent. And so he was put on the vent twice. They said he failed extubation. He actually didn't. He was doing well until they over-sedated him. So they got two bonuses. One for the first time they put him on the vent, where I got the same informed consent, make him a DNR or put him on the vent. There was also an evening where a nurse practitioner at 11:30 came into his room and just asked him a question. So you want to be a DNR, don't you? He had been a full code the entire hospitalization, and I saw that immediately. I called. I said, no, he's a full code. They never consulted me as his medical power of attorney, and they essentially didn't consult him the next day. He said, I didn't even know what she was trying to ask me. But this nurse practitioner took it upon herself to change his code status in the middle of his stay. We did get that fixed, but that was life-threatening. That could have been devastating.
Okay, but you do have the paperwork that says you make decisions if he's incapacitated that you have already?
Yes, we knew before I even called the ambulance that we needed to put that in place, that I needed to be his medical power of attorney, that we needed to put advance directives, that we wouldn't accept vents, that we wouldn't accept redemosphere. That was all in place before we entered the ER. And we also had a list of his home meds, but they immediately took him off him anyway. It's not supposed to happen that way.
All right. Hey, I had Nicole Landers on the show last week talking about a very similar topic. But of course, I went through a whole thing with her about what her ideas were about vaccination in general and things like that, because I wanted to clearly establish what her attitude was there, you know, regarding her work with that organization. You're familiar with Nurse Landers, aren't you?
Very much so. Yes, we're friends. She has supported me through this whole thing and has been wonderful. And we have the same values. Very like-minded.
Excellent. Excellent. No, I was just curious. Anyways, you know, this is a problem, though, that unfortunately is not just yours. This is a repeated story where I'm hearing people's desires to be treated a certain way. Their advocates are removed one way or another, whether they have documentation absolutely backing that up or they don't. If there's an understanding, it seems as though the for-profit situation, as Nurse Landers pointed out, is absolutely provable, might be the motivation. But what are your thoughts on this? I mean, do you think collectively the staff is just acting based on protocols and you think that they're honest brokers here regarding healthcare, or do you think that this is all about the money?
I think it's all about the money. I truly do. He hasn't received standards of care. He was isolated for 20 days and he didn't need to be. Even when they did the expired PCR tests, it only came back presumed positive. It said that they couldn't prove whether what coronavirus it might have been, presumed positive. But that was enough for them to write COVID pneumonia all over the chart. Now, they took my word when I told them that he was COVID positive on December 19th, but they would not take my word with the same test when I said he was negative in four different tests after that. And they've strictly wanted to follow protocol. They haven't wanted to do anything else. So I couldn't see him for the first 20 days. And then they actually orchestrated getting me banned about a month ago. They had a sitter in the room. There's never been a sitter in there before, observing our visit on a Sunday. And then the next day, there was a falsified note accusing me of trying to remove the airway, accusing me of some other things, totally false. But the next day, I get a call from the unit manager, was called into the hospital, was actually physically threatened by some large people. I don't know what their role was, taken to the CEO's office and told that I could not visit my husband anymore.
Wow.
I objected to the note. I wrote out line by line what the truth was, sent it into risk management, and then I found out just a week ago, he almost coded last Monday night, that I couldn't get any information from the nurses anymore because supposedly I critiqued the nurses' notes. It wasn't a critique. It was a formal grievance, and it was just that one time. But I had no idea that I couldn't get updates from the nurses anymore. And they also have taken him off the visitors list. They've just done all kinds of things that appear to be just for spite. So it's about the money, but it's also evil. There's just blatant evil happening here. And we don't know why we've been targeted, but we certainly have been. My husband told me he didn't feel safe. And I talked to him this evening about coming on the show. I said, do you want me to be talking about our situation? He says, absolutely. We need to save others. So well, he's fully alert, and he's beginning to self-advocate again.
Well, this is good news, but I hate to say this to you, but as long as he's in there, he's in danger anyway, whether he's been targeted or not, it seems. Is there any indication as to why you think he may have been targeted specifically? Did he do something? Did he aggravate somebody where, you know, did he make some sort of political stand? Was there some sort of problem on his job? I mean, do you have any idea why, if he's been specifically targeted, why?
Not in particular, nothing we can prove. I mean, when we entered the ER, the doctor was already first thing talking about, before he even had a test, talking about event, talking about rendemosphere. We told them we were refusing both, that we were refusing COVID protocols, and they had a problem with that. The ER doctor wanted to know why we would refuse rendemosphere. I cited all the studies to him. He just rolled his eyes. We were advocating for appropriate care and appropriate standards, and begging for antibiotics. But we were denied everything. And as the standards got worse, I think they just didn't want me to see anymore what was happening. And so to prevent any more accusations to risk management, and they knew we had picked up an attorney, things got worse after that. Every time we tried to fight back or get proper care, they put something in place that made things worse.
Is he in a particular part of the hospital where, like, you know how if you're in some hospitals, they have areas where there is no real visitation because they're intensive care units or something like this? Or is he in a just a general sort of wing of the hospital? Do you know anything about that?
Yes, he's in the ICU. he was on a step-down unit where they told me he was transferred because that's where they house COVID-positive patients, which was a joke. He wasn't COVID-positive. But then when he got the second chest tube, he was moved back to the ICU. And the ICU has been the worst place in the hospital. It was horrible the first 13 days, and it's just as bad now. Falsification of notes, nurses that tell you to tear up notes that you might want to give to the doctor, nurses that tell you, we are the experts, you are not allowed to consult outside doctors, you are not allowed to ask questions, you just have to accept that we're the experts. There are two nurses in particular that are awful.
Okay. It leads me to another question, actually, because you mentioned a sitter being present while you were visiting with them. And I'm just curious if you know what that sitter's job is. Are we talking about a nurse, a nurse's aide? You know, sometimes in ICUs, they assign nurse's aides just to keep a watch on things. In other cases, though, they send social workers in, which, you know, is part of the risk management section of the hospital staff, as you well know. Do you know exactly what kind of sitter you were dealing with there, or is it just somebody who, you know, was meant to observe? Because making very specific accusations about what it is you're trying to do would require some level of knowledge about the circumstances here. You know, a social worker does not necessarily know the difference between one tube or another, or what it is somebody might be doing with a tube. If you're trying to clear around, like, let's just say there was a trach tube in place, if you have to clean it, it may look like you're harming the patient even because it makes them uncomfortable. If you're trying to clean that or whatever, you know, that could be a situation, and somebody who's not qualified to understand what's going on could make all sorts of accusations and observations that are not very valid. So I'm just curious if you know the level of knowledge of your sitter there that was allegedly observing you doing these things you didn't do.
Well, she was actually there the day before, and it was, I believe, the beginning of them orchestrating banning me. She really just sat in a chair. She looked like she was a nurse's aide. She was playing on her phone. There was no interaction, very unprofessional. They told me that, I mean, she basically entered at visiting hours. He had never had a sitter before. He was fully restrained. It's not like he could pull on anything. They said that she was there because he had been pulling on his BiPAP mask. Well, he was on the vent. He wasn't on the BiPAP. So that was a total lie. We knew it. We knew we were being observed. All I did that day was pray into his ear and play music to him. Nothing else. The next day, it was the nurse that accused me of trying to pull out his airway. I arrived. It was loose. He was in distress. I immediately reported it to the only nurse on the unit. His nurse was not on the unit. We don't even know if they purposely loosened it, but he was in distress, and I put my hands on his cheek to make sure he did not lose that airway. I'm a nurse myself. I know what I'm doing, and I didn't want him to lose the airway. It took a half an hour for anyone to come in and even assess it. As soon as it was reported, it should have been assessed by any nurse. Didn't have to be his nurse, but no one came in. So it really seemed purposeful.
Okay, fair enough. And you mentioned that you're a nurse now. Does that mean you're an RN, an LPN, what?
BSN. A BSN, okay. But I haven't done patient care in a number of decades. I'm a healthcare administrator now.
No problem. I was just curious because you if you have the education, you got a better idea than the average, you know, the average individual or, like I said, a social worker. So that's why I asked. Anyway, and I'm asking all these questions because I want to be very specific about this. And again, it would seem wholly unbelievable to some people who would say, well, you know, and trust me, this is not my point of view. Okay. You know, well, doctors and nurses, they're always there to help you. And I do not always see it that way. I got to be honest with you. Sometimes I think through incompetence, and sometimes I think through literally, you know, negative motivations, let's call them. One of them could be you're getting more money if you're able to institute certain treatments, regardless of whether somebody needs them or not. Okay, and maybe you're told that that's the way you're supposed to handle things. You could also just be a follower who's following all of what's supposed to be. And a variety of these things occur that are to the detriment of a patient, in my opinion. But a lot of people out there figure, well, what's the matter with you? Why would you think that these nurses are trying to hurt your husband? Why would you think the hospital's trying to hurt your husband? How would you answer somebody like that who's listening to this?
Well, I know that the one nurse was pushing morphine, and at least the doctor that was on that week told them that he was not to be on opiates anymore. And, you know, the morphine would be fine while he was on the vent, but when he was off, it would suppress respirations. They over-sedated him most of the time. He couldn't clear his carbon dioxide because of it. When I would visit and I would come in and he'd be alert, within about a half an hour, the nurses would say, oh, he's tachycardic, or oh, his respirations are too fast. Now, I can read the monitors. He was fine, and they would sedate him, and he'd be out in a few seconds. They also sedated him the day that she wrote that note with a significant amount of fentanyl. So he doesn't remember that day, and I think that's purposeful. They didn't want him to remember or be able to stand up in court. So, you know, I know the medications that they have used have caused some damage. Even when I reported on a particular medication they used to as a diuretic, that it affected his hearing. The nurse just said to me, well, he can hear me just fine. And I said, I know him intimately. I know what his right ear is like. I know what his left ear is like. I know that one dose of that medication caused damage. So I know him well, and I know what nursing standards should be.
Is he also losing weight over this time, or appearing to, well, you haven't seen him in a bit, but over time, are you aware whether he's losing weight, or is his color is bad, or is he showing signs that he's not receiving proper respiration, regardless of whether they got the tube in or they got a mask on him or whatever? Do you know anything about that currently?
Yes, I can see the portal notes, so I can see his labs every day. I can see progress notes. I can't see anything else, and they don't call me about anything. But he was 186. He's now 130. He's lost that much weight, and they did a nutritional eval on the 12th of January, and they considered him malnourished at that point. They did nothing. They were not offering anything to prevent that. So tremendous muscle wasting, tremendous weakness, tremendous weight loss, and they basically have decimated his body. He has survived in spite of their care, not because of it.
What do you plan to do about this?
We're trying to discharge to home so we can treat the lung damage. If we can begin to treat within 2 months of it occurring, there is a good possibility we can reverse some of the scarring and some of the damage they have done. It's going to take a while to rehab him back from this level of weakness that has been created. But they are even... they won't talk to me about the discharge plan. They're pushing long-term care, acute care facilities that are, when you look at the reviews, considered death traps. They are only talking to him. They gave him a list. I went over the list with them. Thank God he can talk on the phone again. And we don't want that. But all the notes tell us that that's what they want to discharge to. The doctor told me last weekend that he couldn't be supported at home. We know that he can. And they're telling him, well, if you go to long-term care, you get all of these therapies and they can wean you. If you go home, you can't get those. You won't get your valve. You can't be weaned. Very untrue. Nicole Landers has given me examples of people that have been brought home by the wives. Respiratory therapy has been involved. In one particular case, the wife had her husband weaned, and he has gotten his life back. It's absolutely possible, and we need to treat what they have refused to treat. That will not happen in a long-term acute care facility.
No, it won't. Have you considered the possibility of bringing in a different advocate who can act in your stead, because clearly they're going to be uncooperative with you, but particularly, is there someone else that could be offered into the equation that could perhaps facilitate this? Because it seems to me rather odd that they can force you to continue to take treatment and not go home. I have always been able to release myself from hospitals against medical advice when I choose to at different points in time, and I've known plenty of other people who do. What is going on here that is not really happening? I mean, because even if you have to sign a piece of paper that effectively says, look, I feel like I have to understand that I might go home and die, they do let people do that. generally speaking, what is the circumstance here that is preventing this?
They are talking about discharge. His lungs are in worse shape than when he went in. He's decimated, as I said, but they are talking about discharge straight from the ICU. That never used to be a thing. People always went to a step-down unit first. We just have to get the equipment in the home. We need the oxygen equipment. We need to set up some agency help because he's going to need rehab. And because the hospital won't let me in for teaching, I went to school back in the 80s. Trachs and vents were not heavily used, so I have not been trained on trach care. And I will have we're hoping to get a respiratory therapist to stay with us for the first 3 days to make sure that I can handle all emergencies and to help us wean at home. It's not happening in the hospital. And I have a doctor that's willing to come to the home, and we have a plan to begin his recovery, which has not been instituted in the hospital. So okay, that's what we're trying for. But they're pushing for long-term acute care, and that will delay his healing. That will probably cement the lung damage because we need to start treating that now. And they're trying to manipulate and scare him into agreeing to go to one of these facilities. They're looking as far south as Newport News. We live in Northern Virginia. It would be a seven-hour round trip for me to go.
That seems absolutely unacceptable. I mean, even in the case that he did need a long-term facility like that, that just doesn't, something doesn't seem right here. I mean, well beyond the obvious, something is wrong with this equation. It seems as though, I don't know. How is it that these people have a right to make these decisions on somebody's behalf and continue to do this? It seems like insanity to me that this is going on. I'm not saying you're insane. I'm saying that this is insanity, what you're describing. So, I mean, how do you wrap your mind around this unless you've actually, again, I've heard plenty of stories, and thankfully I haven't had anybody who's a member of my family in this situation yet. But I say yet because I keep hearing more and more that this kind of thing is happening, and that people that go in with a minor problem just wind up not coming out of the facilities. So, I mean, what am I to take from this if I'm somebody who has not had an experience like this? I mean, outside of the fact that we're all sort of in danger here, and somehow again, no offense to you because you've worked in the industry, but you know, that white coat does not represent authority. And I even said that to Ms. Landers on the show. And she said, look, I understand what you're saying and agree with you. You know, you don't have the right to destroy people or to even choose their path of care, in my estimation. But again, I'm not the one who makes the rules. This is really, really bizarre. I mean,
they don't have this right. They've taken our lives. They've taken him away from me for a month now, and 20 days prior to that, they've taken that from our lives. And he is alert. He's able to talk with me about that, and he knows that they are trying to control him. He was actually telling me today, they don't care what I ask for. They don't listen to me. I can tell them I don't want this position. I don't want this pillow. I don't want this drug. And he's disregarded. He's not treated as an adult man. He's treated as a body in the bed, a protocol. He means nothing to them. He's everything to me. So the care that he will get here will be so much more. The therapy that they're giving him now is laughable. OT and PT go in together. They started not by strengthening him, but they just started, let's sit up and put your legs over the side of the bed. And of course he can make it a minute or two, and it doesn't go well. He gets dizzy. So this past Monday they came in together. They charge separately for those therapies, but they come in together. And so they tried to stand him up. They never strengthened his lower limbs. They didn't give him, they had bed exercises written, but they never told him about it. And he fainted. He desatted and he fainted. He didn't have the strength for that. And then just yesterday I heard the doctor say, well, if you go home, you're going to need 1 hour of physical therapy 5 days a week. Now, that doctor knows that outpatient therapy doesn't work that way. And he's only gotten 15 minutes every 3 days in the hospital. So why all of a sudden would they think he could tolerate an hour 5 days a week? Well, there's also, just all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, okay. And maybe I'm asking an ignorant question here, but I mean, if that is the level of care that they are prescribing for him, it doesn't sound like he needs to be in a critical care unit. If that's all that's required, you're talking about 15 minutes a day. Something is wrong here with this equation also, or am I speaking out of turn here?
They're just not giving him what he requires. They were writing for OT and PT a long time ago, and it never happened. I mean, this, they brushed his teeth 4 times in the first 55 days. He had 4 baths in the first 55 days. He's starting to get it now because he complained to the doctor, but he's going to need major dental work because they've ignored just basic care. It enrages me. It just truly does when I listen to them talk down to him and just diminish him as a human being. He's not a human being to them.
This is a horrible story, and this is a horrible situation that you're in. Unfortunately, like I said, you joined a little late here, but I've tried to go through this as quickly as possible to get at everything, but I'm sure I've missed a great deal of what needs to be said here. So, by all means, fill us in with the rest of what's going on and what it is you would like people to take away from this, because clearly, as your husband indicated and as you are indicating, you want people to hear this story, to know what's going on, to save others. So what would you suggest? And also still the question stands. I know what it is you want to do here, but realistically, what is it that we can do in dealing with this sort of circumstance where a lot of people are just simply going to appeal to what they think is authority and say, look, the doctors know best, the nurses know best. I mean, and some people are going to get tricked into, well, getting themselves diminished and possibly dead. You know, and again, I don't wish this for you. I'm just saying that you of course are at all times aware of that possibility. So, you know, what is it that we need to get out to people here?
Well, what we need to get out is to avoid hospitals at all costs. Work with the Frontline Critical Care Alliance. Work with frontline nurses, frontline doctors, Zelenko, My Free Doctor, any available resource to avoid the hospital. What we didn't know going into this is that, you know, I was concerned that I couldn't maintain his oxygen levels. I could have gotten high flow in the home and he would have never had to go in. He should have been discharged 10 days after he went in for simple aspiration pneumonia with the right antibiotic. We are 77 days in and it's going to take months to get his life back. And we're praying that we can. We really do feel that the doctors actually, you know, we live by faith, and we've had a number of people pray and determine that they really did want to kill him, but God was not going to allow it. And we have had to walk by faith every day. We've been denied everything we've asked for, simple things like an alternating pressure mattress because now he has bed sores. That should never happen in an ICU, never. The lack of protein, the lack of antibiotics, just simple things like B12 shots for macrocytic anemia. None of it's been offered. None of it's been provided. Even ordered therapies and ordered protocols like getting him prone. He's been prone 4 times in 77 days. That's a major intervention for pneumonia. It happened 4 times in 77 days. It's an abysmal situation, and it seems like the leader in all of this has been the chief medical officer of the hospital, who orchestrated banning me, who condoned the falsified notes, and it was just absolutely cruel. He actually came up and reprimanded both John and I at one point and said that we were intimidating the staff. Basically, I was intimidating the staff. I had staff come up to me afterward and said, "You've never intimidated me." I probably intimidated the evil ones because I questioned, why are you giving him opiates? He doesn't even have pain. Why are you sedating him so severely?
See, I had that question in my mind when you said, you know, that they were giving him morphine and then also fentanyl. I mean, you got to have some profound pain. And even then, quite frankly, they don't always give you that level of pain medicine unless you're, you know, unless you clearly have some severe injuries, burns, you know, something like this. They don't usually give you that. I mean, unless things are broken.
Right.
In your body. I mean, honestly, and I'm speaking as somebody who's broken both his neck and his back. Okay. It's that is bizarre in and of itself. And I'm willing to bet that they also fed him some benzos too, didn't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And finally, we got one decent doctor for 1 week. You get whoever's coming through the ICU. And he wrote, no long-acting benzos, no opiates. But the nurse that really wants to give him morphine, that really wants to suppress his respiration, and I worked hospice, morphine is used to ease people out. You know, he finally told her no. They didn't give morphine and fentanyl together. They gave fentanyl and propofol. When he first went on the vent, but then they continued it long after it was necessary. And then they would sedate him every time I came to visit. All of a sudden, he would have a heart issue or something, they would say. And it wasn't true. I could read the monitors, and they'd just sedate him for the rest of the visit.
And I can understand some use of the benzos if you're having to, you know, to put a tube down somebody's throat.
Right.
Because quite honestly, a level of sedation would be responsible in that circumstance, but a lot of the stuff you're describing here, it doesn't sound right. You know, and propofol, again, here's that's an anesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's what they put him on between vent episodes. Doing well first day, not having pain, not anxious. They gave him Precedent. It's used to keep people asleep during surgery. And then he ended up on the vent again. A second bonus for the hospital.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So I'm reading about this. You know, if they put him on a ventilator, it's worth this much. You know, COVID diagnosis is worth this much. It is amazing to me, though, that again, the alleged care industry, again, apologies to you and those that are honest brokers in it, but quite frankly, I do not trust it. I cannot. Too often have I seen things like this. I mean, you mentioned the bed sores, and we went over that quickly, but honestly, even comatose patients that are in ICU, and you're describing that he's coming in and out of lucidity here, even a comatose patient should not end up in that condition. They specifically have people doing things to avoid that normally. So it sounds like, you know, my apologies for sounding like I'm trying to be witty here, but the intensive care unit's not very intense about their care. You know, so what in the world is going on here except that he's deteriorating? And what are they telling you primarily outside of the COVID pneumonia, which, by the way, I've also been hospitalized for pneumonia, just again for the record, regular pneumonia, not COVID pneumonia, because I got sick in 2020 from what I think was COVID, but I was never tested. But, you know, coughing up pudding, basically, and really having a hard time. I did for weeks and weeks. So I assume it was this thing. But frankly, I have had pneumonia in the past. And a pretty severe case or two, indeed, because I was homeless and stuff like that when I was younger. So, you know, things like this occur. But this is just I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around it. And truth is, it's not just your story. I'm hearing about this a lot where people are, again, going in and basically getting crushed and held captive by the institutions that are allegedly there to, what, make you better, for lack of a better term. So, Lori, I give you the last little bit here to, again, just tell people whatever it is they want to know. If you have a suggestion, if there's some way that we can keep track of what's going on, are you letting people know about this constantly somewhere else, or are you just speaking out on a couple different shows and things like this to inform people that they need to be very wary? And I'm telling you, unless you got something you don't know how to set a bone, find a friend who does. If you don't know how to stitch yourself up, you might want to learn, because I absolutely support the idea of avoid the hospital if you want to survive. And especially at this time where it's extremely profitable in the COVID reality that they have projected upon us all, which has nothing to do with the reality itself, except that sadly there are going to be casualties in this war on the invisible enemy. And sadly, it's not on a battlefield. It's more likely in a hospital. So, but by all means, I leave you to your own words for the last little bit here. And again, tell anybody what it is that you want or what he wants people to know as well. I assume that you can speak for him a little bit too, if you like. Right. So, whatever it is you want to enter, go ahead.
I mean, we really just we're warning people. I'm doing the shows to not just to help us and to be able to find resources for ourselves. I do have an attorney that's trying to work with us now. He has warned me that if he gets more involved, the hospital will make things even more difficult. We need a respiratory therapist to stay with us for a few days to help us wean and to teach me. I think we may have someone, but we're not sure that's going to work out. We need to make sure he doesn't go to one of the long-term care acute facilities. The reviews are horrid. The warnings to stay away from those are even worse than the hospitals. They don't call doctors. People die of sepsis. Less than 50% of people ever come out. So we're trying to avoid that. But we really just want to bring light to the darkness and let people know that this is happening. It shouldn't be happening. The hospital has pulled so many illegal moves here. But for them to get away with falsifying the medical record, to purposely lie, to threaten us. I mean, one of the large men followed me out of the hospital the day I was banned and tried to grab me. None of that is warranted. I'm 5'5". I've lost, 25 pounds myself in all of this. They didn't need three big guys to threaten me. It's been cruel. It's been escalated. And it doesn't have to be this way. We don't understand why they have been so nasty and so cruel, except for the fact that we tried to self-advocate, we asked questions, we questioned the standards, we questioned the treatment, and we didn't accept their COVID protocols. We wouldn't accept Remdesivir. We wouldn't even accept a vent until the only choice they gave us was vent him or make him a DNR. And then they tried to make him a DNR without asking him or asking me. They have taken over our lives, and now we're fighting so hard to get him out safely, to get the proper equipment to the house, to get an agency involved, to have the proper people here to support us, to get his life back. He wants his life back. He wants to live.
Well, and here's the thing. Look, I the best I can do for you personally is to obviously pray for you. I certainly don't want to see a bad outcome. I'd like to see him get his life back. I'd like to see everybody get their life back, to be honest with you, because no one else has a right to take your life outside of, fate. In my estimation. So that's the way it is. I mean, and if somebody chooses to die, I also don't object to that, but, that's a topic for another day. When your choices are not your own, though, this is supposed to be a violation of so many different things. It is beyond belief. So this story is, my apologies to you, but this is a sickening story. This is absolutely sickening. This is absolutely ridiculous. And the more we fight, the better off we'll all do, I think. And I hope that you win this battle for sure. I'm not a big believer in lawyers and things like that, but throw everything at them you can. I hope that there's lots of lawsuits, and maybe that would be the thing, because it becomes less profitable to run people through these machines and try and get them to accept, death through diagnosis. Okay, and through the machinery that is the for-profit medical system, well, then maybe we might all do a little better. So I'm with you on all levels of resistance, no matter what weapon you throw at them. Look, clearly I'm not advocating for any sort of violence here or anything. Although, when people want to intimidate you, self-defense is never violence. Just saying. And that's something that we need to keep in mind as well. So with that, you know, I really thank you for sharing this story tonight. Is there anything that listeners can do to follow up, like I said, or I don't know, contact, reach out, assist? I don't know what even to ask you. You know, is there anything that we as listeners to your story can do outside of trying to educate ourselves, defend our own families, defend our loved ones, whoever they might be, and at all times refuse to simply accept what we're being told as far as protocols go? Is there anything else that we can do?
Actually, you know, if we could find a respiratory therapist or an ICU nurse to support us, to help me re-educate myself on some patient care and learn about the trach so that I can safely bring him home, that would go a very long way. And, you know, we're looking for someone who is ideally unvaxxed and holistic and smart about things. You know, if they're unvaxxed, then they're thinking and they're going to see him as an individual, and the hospital has not. So these are our current needs, and we're just fighting against the hospital's desire to send him to a death trap now. After all of this, they really, really don't want him to survive.
Okay.
And it's ridiculous.
Do me a favor and stay on the call. I'm going to close out my show, but stay on the call. Lori Simpson, because I want to share a piece of information with you. It might help you. Okay. And maybe I've got a partial answer. I don't know, but let's see. But either way, this is horrific. And, of course, I want to thank Ed Opperman for being on the first hour. And I do despise ending the show on a down note, but what else am I supposed to do? This is horrible. Anyway, Lori Simpson, thank you for sharing. Thank you for being strong. And, man, I just don't even know what to say at this point, except we have to take care of ourselves, because the people that are in the care industry are not clearly doing it collectively at this point.
Thank you.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, Larry Hancock. For more information, go to Larry-Hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at Amazon.com in digital or physical form.